because I'm so excited. Oh my goodness, Ali, it's not just the two of us, is it? We have somebody else on here today.
Another Matt. We have the author of T1D Pro, Matt Collins. Matt, how are you doing?
I've spent the last 10 years pushing the limits while identifying trends and patterns in my type 1 diabetes management. Follow along as I learn, apply, and share the fitness, nutrition, and lifestyle strategies that I've learned from diabetes experts around the world. The real question is, how can we live fearlessly with diabetes while maintaining stable blood sugars? This podcast is here to give you the answer. My name is Matt Vandervecht, and with my co-host Ali Abdul-Karim, we welcome you to Pardon My Pancreas.
Hey guys, today's episode is sponsored by InPen by Companion Medical. A reusable injector pen plus an intuitive smartphone interface equals smart insulin delivery. Simplify your diabetes care plan. Check them out.
What is up, Pardon My Pancreas? It's Matt and Ali coming at you again. We have a fun topic to talk about today. I'm having a difficulty talking already because I'm so excited. Oh my goodness, Ali, it's not just the two of us, is it? We have somebody else on here today.
Another Matt. We have the author of T1D Pro, Matt Collins. Matt, how are you doing?
Doing well, guys. How are you guys doing?
Amazing.
Doing fantastic. It's interesting having a second Matt. It's going to be a fun conversation.
Yeah, we got to have like, one Matt.
Which Matt are you talking to?
Yeah, it's Matt 1 or Matt 2 or Matt K. I don't know.
Oh, man. Well, Matt, we're glad to have you on here. It'll be a fun conversation chatting about your book, but I want to talk about you a little bit.
Cool.
I've been kind of peeping your Instagram profile for a while now. I think I found you about a year ago. Mm-hmm. And I would like to know more about your story. Can you tell us a little bit about your diagnosis?
Sure, you bet. So I was diagnosed about 21 years ago. I'm 37 years old, and I was a freshman in high school at the time. I was a high school quarterback.
Oh, no.
And yeah. So as if things weren't awkward enough, right?
Right.
Going into freshman year of high school. I'm the quarterback of the freshman team, and I go out there on the last game of the season, and I was doing okay throughout the season. And this last game, I threw 52 passes and completed exactly one. And so, so the parents were like, "What the hell is going on with this guy? You know, he's losing weight. He's doing terrible in this last game of the season." And as luck would have it, one of the parents of one of the players happened to be a doctor, and she saw the symptoms, and my mom was explaining the classic symptoms of what I was experiencing, you know, going to the bathroom, trouble seeing, losing a lot of weight and this kind of thing. And obviously a red flag went up in her mind, and she said, "Look, I want you to take him directly to the ER. I think I know what's going on. Give me a call when you get there." And sure enough, I peed on one of the diasticks, and obviously it was, you know, black in color. And immediately I went straight up to the top of the list on the emergency room chart, and they tested my blood, and sure as heck, it was, you know, 680. And I spent the night in the hospital and was diagnosed with T1D pretty much that night. So pretty, you know, typical story, but thank God that woman was there, because if she wasn't, you know, it could have been a much different story. Mm. So, yeah,
absolutely. And I'm guessing that was somewhere around May-ish, end of the school year?
No. So football. So it was in the fall. Yeah. So it was October.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Football is fall.
Yeah. Not football like the Europeans.
Yeah. We got the wrong one.
but yeah, no. So it was right before, it was actually right before Halloween. And I remember going back to school, you know, right after getting diagnosed and being in the hospital for a week, and all the teachers like, "Oh my God, Matt, so sorry. This happened right before Halloween." I said, "No, it's okay. I understand. You know, these are the cards dealt. And so now we have to deal with it." So, I spent the next, couple of years kind of figuring it all out. And again, this was back in 1997. So there wasn't a lot of information out there at the time.
Yeah.
And, I was also a baseball player, and was pretty decent at baseball, and ended up getting a scholarship to the University of Michigan. Wow. And ended up playing there for 4 years. I was a pitcher for them. And then after that, you know, real life started, and I started working, and now live in Miami, Florida with my wife and daughter.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
Wow. Yeah. It was kind of cool. But it's been a good journey so far.
Well,
that's incredible.
Okay,
go ahead.
I have a question. So did you feel like diagnosis How did it affect your life as an athlete? Because, I mean, it's fair to say you probably grew up as an athlete prior to diabetes and then after. Like, how did that go for you after diagnosis as an athlete?
Yeah, it's a good question. So sports were always easy for me growing up, right? I grew up coordinated and everything just seemed to flow naturally. The thing that was different back then in 1997 is that we didn't have CGMs, right? They didn't exist. Mm. And I, as I'm saying this, I realize that I sound like I'm super old, right? But you know, I'm not that old.
Back in the day.
Back in the day, in my time, right? Walked 37 miles of school and 4 feet of snow. No.
Right.
But yeah, we didn't have CGMs. So the only way to test your blood sugar was, you know, with the old school 45-second thing that would count down and then you go play. But looking back on it now, sports are a lot easier now with the CGMs and the tools that we have than they were when I was in high school and college. And it's sort of a shame because I think I could have done a lot better than I did. Not discounting the fact that I did decently well in high school and college, but I think given the tools that we have now, kids can do a lot of really great things. I mean, there's a guy that I played tennis. Well, I haven't played tennis with him yet, but I know him. His name's JC Aragon. He's a ATP tennis player. He's like top 200 in the world. He's just kicking ass. Wow. And I thought, you know, this guy can do whatever he wants. He can be top 10 in the world. And I don't think T1D is going to slow him down. So it's pretty cool.
Hmm. That is super cool. I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, that we just heard about another NBA star that's a type 1 diabetic. Oh, did you guys hear about that?
I did.
Like a week ago?
I think.
I did. Yeah.
That's super exciting. Just seeing guys that are just changing the rules, right? It's like, type 1 diabetes, you can't do that. You can't eat that. Mm-hmm. You're going to die early. And it's like, nah, I'm a professional athlete that people know about me. Well, that's amazing.
Yeah. 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 And Matt, you're really into personal fitness, right? And this is what you do daily.
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I was actually diagnosed as a collegiate athlete my sophomore year, middle of the rowing season.
Yeah.
And luckily, I guess, one of the guys in my boat was also a type 1 diabetic and he'd had it since he was 8. So I was like, hey dude, I got this thing. What do I do?
What are the odds?
And he helped me out. I did not carry sugar for a while, so I'm glad he was there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I bet.
But it's a big shift. I want to say something real quick. I think as long as no one has changed anything recently, I'm pretty sure all three of us are MDI. Is that right?
Correct.
Yep.
Woo!
Yeah.
I feel like that's pretty rare these days, that most people are on a bump, and all of us happen to be MDI right now, at least.
It is very. I mean, I think about it in like when Matt was talking about, Matt Collins, you were talking about getting diagnosed, you know, it was, like you said, pee on a stick and no CGMs weren't. And CGMs are fairly new relatively speaking. And having the ability to be on MDI and still have your diabetes controlled as well as with a pump, it's just a matter of, you know, the CGM is just taking it to that next level and being an athlete, like a, you know, pro tennis player or an NBA player. And they have the ability to do that and, you know, finally manage their diabetes, not just get by and not, you know, pass out on the court. It's a matter like they can thrive with their diabetes and be an amazing athlete. It's just the technology we have today. Just like we're talking about, you know, MDI and having a Dexcom. I know all three of us have a Dexcom, if I'm right.
For sure. Yeah. For sure.
Massive difference there.
You're 100% right. Because the ability to have, I'm not trying to jump into the book to sell or anything like that, but it's a super important topic that people need to understand. Is that the ability to visualize your glucose is 100% game changer, right? You just 20 years ago, you had no idea if your blood sugars were crashing, if they were rising, if they were, you know, if you check and you're 100, but you threw 4 pitches in the dirt and you wondered why. Well, now we have the ability to see that, right? Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, we didn't. And it was a super, super big difference. And just the way you manage your life.
Yeah, so. I think it's just crazy to think people that were diagnosed, I want to say like 20 or 30 years ago, where I heard stories, they would take R and you know, mix other insulins and just hope for the best. They'll dose that one time and then eat throughout the day. And I'm like, wow, that's such a shot in the dark. And, you know, you go out for a walk or you want to go, you know, do something adventurous, hiking, you've got to pack, like, you know, a lot of glucose with you and just hope for the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, the world is changing. Yeah. We've got so many tools nowadays, and you talk about glucose visibility and like you said, it's from your book, but the glucose visibility, being able to see from that 30,000 foot view, right? Where it's like, you're not stuck in the small details of, I have one number, what do I do with this? It's now, okay, I'm trending in this direction. Yeah. I should probably eat soon, or I should probably take some insulin soon, right? Like, there's different things we can do proactively instead of reactively, which is incredible.
Mm. Bingo.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. we have the information and the data. Now it's a matter of, like, picking up the right books and seeing, okay, what do I do with this kind of blood sugar, or what do I do here? And, you know, it's a matter of teaching newly diagnosed or people with diabetes, what do we do with that information and that number?
Sure, sure. Don't you guys wonder if there's a nutritional coach, or, you know, the physician on the sideline at the NBA games, or, you know, in the dugout in baseball for MLB games or something like that, who have the person's cell phone or their Dexcom receiver, kind of watching the numbers and saying, okay, he's trending low. He's 97 right now. I'm going to pull him out and give him a Sour Patch Kids or an orange juice, something like that. I wonder if that happens, or if they even know.
Interesting. Right. No, interesting story on that. So for a number of years, my single career goal was to be a firefighter. And I got my EMT cert. I was going to get ready for paramedic school and do all this stuff. And I was asking around, like, hey guys, who has type 1 and is a firefighter? I need to know this is possible. I need to know what you do, strategies. And one of the guys I spoke to said that his captain has Dexcom Follow on his phone, so the captain stays outside the fire. This dude's rushing in, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if at any moment his blood sugars dip too low, captain radios him. Hey man, blood sugar 60. Get out here. Grab a Capri Sun or a Gatorade. We'll let you rest up for 5 minutes and send you back in.
That's awesome.
So he's watching it. It's so cool. Wow. Now he's got this extra buffer, right? Where he's like, I'm not as in danger. I'm going to be hyper focused on this fire and saving people, right? My captain, he's got my back on the sidelines. So it's super cool that is what our technology is now. People can sit on the sidelines and kind of watch over you like that protectful mother, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, you bet. You bet. Absolutely.
See, I wouldn't doubt if that's happened on the sidelines of those big games. That'd be super cool.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I wanted to pull actually from your book. So you've got glucose visibility as the first topic you mentioned. It's something pretty cool about T1D Pro. I love acronyms. And you mentioned your guide to type 1 diabetes management. And guide is G.U.I.D.E. Which means it stands for something. I was like, okay, where is it? I got to find what this thing stands for.
Yeah.
And on the back cover, we got G is glucose visibility, U, understanding, I, insulin, D, diet, and E for exercise. I thought that was so cool. You found a word that encompasses a lot of the factors that go into diabetes management. And it's kind of a 360 view, right?
Yeah. And it was sort of serendipitous the way this all came together. And I was sitting around thinking to myself, right when people on Instagram were asking me or requesting me to write a book, they said, look, you have your stuff together. Please synthesize this in an easy to read manual or guide of some sort and put it together so I can rip through it in 3 hours. And I said, okay, great. Cool. What are the inputs that I actually do to make my life simple? And I said, okay, first of all, I understand what it is that I need to do. So I have my goals in mind, right? The second thing is I have a CGM. What can I call that? And I created this little thing, glucose visibility, which I think sums it up pretty well.
Yeah.
And then you have to manage your insulin, and there are a couple of different popular ways you can do it. Diet is super, super important. And then exercise. And those are kind of the tools that I use to manage the two variables, insulin and diet, right? And then there's another chapter just on how to sleep properly. But as I was putting together the acronym, I thought, oh my God, this is perfect. Guide actually does work for this. It actually reads more like OOGUIDE, because the first chapter is understanding.
I noticed that.
So, and kind of the structure of the book is similar to, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever read that?
I haven't read it, but I kind of have a tiny understanding of what it is.
It's a good book. Very good book. Mm. The difference is his is 450 pages long, and it would drive, you know, new diabetics or new mothers of diabetics crazy if they had to sit there and read this for 3 months. But I purposely made this about 110 pages in illustrated so that somebody who wasn't necessarily familiar with the disease or the condition would be able to understand it pretty easily.
Mm. That's helpful.
It's amazing. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure I read in the book that you illustrated this yourself. Is that right?
I did. Not my strongest suit.
No, you're quite the artist, man.
I had some help from my little iPad here, but there's a cool software that I sort of picked up, and it was actually kind of fun.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
I wanted to jump back to one thing. Actually, I mentioned how we're all MDI. Mm-hmm. Have you always been MDI, Matt?
No, I at one point I was using a pump, and I realized what is that. I'm gonna read a quick sentence of the book here, that the goal of having a pump or doing MDI is really just to deliver insulin, right? And the insulin is delivered one of two ways that we know right now that's popular. One is through a pump, or one is through MDI. There's also an inhalable insulin, but I don't even really want to walk down that path yet, because it's there's so many variables that you have to deal with that.
Mm.
But in the book, I say it's our job as T1Ds to figure out how to administer insulin properly to maintain blood sugars at optimal levels. To do so, it's vital to understand the different types of insulins involved in the process and the methods for doing so. There's no right or wrong way to do this. There are just methods that are right for you, right? And as I was kind of pondering, okay, should I use a pump or not? I looked at the risk factors behind a pump, but also the pros. There are a lot of great, cool things that are going on in the pump world right now. In fact, with I forgot the name of the pump company, but they're
Tandem.
T-Slim. Yeah. They have some phenomenally cool things going on right now to be able to control the high and low blood sugars.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like Medtronic's. We'll get to Medtronic in a second. But I think they have some really interesting things going on right now. That said, my risk tolerance for pumps is very low. So I don't, if the insulin, part at the end, I have it in the book. I forgot what it's called, but the little plastic thing that's sticking in your body, the infusion site, ever failed on me, I would go insane, right? Mm. If that thing failed, and that's the only insulin that I'm getting delivered for my basal rate and for my fast acting, as you guys know, I wouldn't be getting anything, and you'd be 350 in, you know, an hour. That would drive me insane. So I said, okay, you know, that combined with the fact that I have to monitor and manage the batteries and the insulin levels and all this kind of stuff, maybe I'd just be better off with MDI. So I made the switch about 7 years ago to MDI, and I've loved it. Absolutely loved it. Now, that said, there are some cool things that I'm missing out on, right? The ability to alter your midday basal rates and things like this.
Yeah.
But overall, you know, I think the pros for me outweigh the cons for MDI.
Yeah, because I mean, I look at it as like you said, if the cannula gets bent or it just doesn't go, you don't get the insulin properly with a pump, then you're shooting back up. But then that's like a give or a take with MDI. You know, the MDI people are like, well, this can happen that can lead us to a high blood sugar or extremely low blood sugar where we accidentally dosed our fast acting and we got it confused with our long acting, you know, and things like that. That can just happen. It's just a matter of like, we need to speak to the MDI people and the pump people that we need to just understand that things are going to happen regardless of what you have. It's good to minimize your errors, chance of error, and just learn from there essentially.
Exactly right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So in the book, what I do is I list out my view of the pump cons and pump pros. And so like, for example, in the pump cons, I say, infusion site failure, and write up a little thing about explaining what that is, tubing issues, battery failure, insulin reservoir capacity problems, and a big one that I think people overlook, product management.
Mm,
that's a pain.
Yeah,
that's
no, a big I, that's, pain. That's a good one. That's actually something to mention because, you know, my Matt was asking me, you know, the pros and cons of a pump. And that was the first thing I thought of when I had the Omnipod tubeless pump. You know, it was like I had to take out time out of my day in the middle of my shift to take out my pump. And, you know, of course, these are cons, but then I think, in my opinion, it balances out perfectly, but only depending on the individual of what they'd like. And I just think it's so helpful in your book that, especially for newly diagnosed people, to just be like, okay, let me see my options instead of my doctor being like, you're doing this now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah. That was the goal. That was the goal, is just to give, you know, somebody who's maybe not familiar and hasn't had the condition for 20 years, like we have, to just understand what are my options and what am I really getting from each? Because unfortunately, you know, and I hate to say this, in the medical device world, you may not be getting the you know, most clear information, because some people might be motivated by the sales and these kinds of things.
Correct. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I don't know if you spoke about this in your book yet. I don't want to really change the topic, but I want to get your guys' input on this, being that all three of us are MDI, at least now. I don't know if you have mentioned this, Matt Collins, in your book with injecting in public. So recently, my girlfriend and I, we both have diabetes. I don't know if Matt, you heard the story, but we were at a bar and she's very, I guess you can say, vocal with her diabetes. I am too, but she was, you know, she was using her syringe like it was a wand and a pen. And she was asking this bartender, the woman, and she was like, hey, you know, what's in your frozen margarita? You know, granted, frozen margaritas are very high in sugar and whatnot. And the first thing she says is, she's like, well, you can't have that. And my girlfriend was like, I was like, oh, strike one. She was like, I just dose for that. And, you know, low carb or not, everyone knows it's just something you don't say to a diabetic. You can't eat that. It just feels like you're limiting us. So we kind of just, we let that go. And then she was injecting, asked another question. And then she looks at her and goes like, you know what? It's actually against health regulations. You shouldn't be doing that in public. You should do that in the bathroom. And then I was like, strike two, pass strike two, pass strike three. And we were so flustered. You know, we kept it cool. And my first response instantly was, so you're going to tell me I need to go in the most unsanitary room in this restaurant, a bathroom, to inject a hole in my body? And I don't know what her response was. It didn't really matter. You know, ignorant people are ignorant people. But main point is, it was actually unfortunate. My girlfriend cried and, you know, we were upset. But my question to both of you is, how do you guys go about that? And also as an advocate, you know, all these kids and parents are looking up to you.
I want to make a t-shirt that says, I inject in public.
I love it. I'm buying
100%.
That shirt.
I'm going to make that. That's cool. you bring up a damn good point. And it's, I guess what I have here is MDI con number three, which is injection phobia in public, right? And I just say a quick thing about it, but a quick story. I had a very similar instance. This was well before I met my wife. I was dating a woman from New Orleans, right? It's a deep South. And nothing against deep South. Deep South is cool. It's fun. Good, cool people. But she was under the opinion, the same opinion as that server, or whoever told your girlfriend, you need to go to the bathroom. This is rude, man. I dumped her about 3 seconds after that. I thought, man, what, are you kidding me? You want, like, the same thought process went through my mind is, you want me to go to the dirtiest place to do what should be the most sterile thing I'm going to do all day? That's ludicrous. So, but yeah, as how to advocate for it, I guess, you know, I'll just make the shirts. That's or educate people, right? They don't know. They don't really understand what we're doing. So,
yeah. I think that's one. I mean, to answer my own question, which is really annoying, is I like to make videos of me injecting in public and then putting it out, and I'm hoping that kid sees it or hoping that parent sees it, and just advocating for ourselves.
It's a great idea. Kids are probably scared, right, in school or. Yeah. Something like that.
I think it's kids are mean.
No, 100%. Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. I think it's cool to do that. Make some videos and show them what's up.
Yeah. What about you, Matt? Matt Vandevek.
Dude, kids are super mean.
Yeah. We know that. Yeah.
Oh, man. For sure. When I first got diagnosed, I'm basically an adult. I was over 18. I was diagnosed at 19, and for the first couple of years, I was super embarrassed about it. I saw it as a weakness. I saw it as an imperfection. I wanted to hide every bit of it because I don't want to be different. Coming out of high school, I was super insecure. I was super shy. So I didn't want something else that was going to make me more different, you know? And so I was the kid that would excuse myself from the restaurant table, go to the bathroom. Then I would test my finger in a stall. I would inject in the stall. So there's no chance of anyone seeing me do it. And I'd walk back out as if nothing happened. Continue to eat my food. Hardly anybody knew I had diabetes. And that's the way that I wanted it back then. And I mean, you know, it's part society, right? People would look at me weird if I did it in public. I knew that. So I avoided it. But honestly, it was my own problem. I knew that I had an insecurity around it. And over the years, I've pushed through that, right? Like now, I don't care. I wear tank tops, yeah. Dexcom shows. I'll go shirtless with pump sites. And people are like, what's that? I'm like, let's talk. You know, I love educating. And I think part of the reason that you may have run into that situation where the bartender is like, hey, you can't do that here, is ignorance. You know, she wasn't educated. She might not know what you were doing. I mean, it sounds like she knew you were diabetic because she said you can't have that. But, you know, it's the ignorance in our society, and it's not necessarily all their fault. There's just, like, I don't know everything there is to know about every disease. I just don't.
Yeah.
And so I can't expect everyone else to know everything about diabetes. But I think it's our job, especially as people who are louder in the community, to spread awareness and to spread that message that it is okay to do this. I need this to survive, and I'm not hurting anybody else. I'm going to do it right here. You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good point. That's perfectly said. Like, we can't expect, you know, everyone to know about this disease and have this. I mean, there's so many other reasons why that woman reacted that way. Maybe she was having a bad day and she was just tired of us asking questions, and she's, maybe she is a little more ignorant. Thuriko's asking way too many questions. but you know, it's also your personality, because I was between two sides, you know. In high school, when I got diagnosed, I would sometimes go to the bathroom, and then sometimes I'll just inject in front of everyone. It just depends how I felt. And it just depends on your personality. But the person who taught me how to be bold with it was my girlfriend. You know, she just pulls, you know, her syringe out and doses. And I'm like, man, you really like that timing. And then plus hearing another episode on a different podcast about, you know, how unsanitary it is to go to the bathroom, and secretly we're telling ourselves, this is bad. I should hide it. I'm ashamed. And I was like, oh, I'm done. I'm not going to the bathroom anymore.
Wow.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. I'm peeing man, though.
I can relate to what you said about the insecurity, because I find myself very comfortable doing it around people I know, right?
But
I fly a lot, and I'm always a little bit nervous that the person next to me is going to think that I'm doing drugs,
or right?
Oh yeah, you know, yeah.
Who's gonna do? Who would do that, right?
But flights, especially, but still, though, because it's so close.
Yeah,
you're just like right next to him.
I won't hit you, I swear.
I swear. You should look up and be like, "Hey, you want some?"
Oh my god!
That's just it. They don't know, and so I don't want them to get nervous, or I don't know. There's a whole bunch of insecurities that go on. I mean, I can relate to that.
I don't want to drag it on, but like, I think another thing is I don't want someone like feeling bad for me, especially if it's a friend that doesn't know I have diabetes yet, like a coworker. And I'm like, I don't want to go through this chatter and then the pity and then the story. Yeah. I'm just going to move away.
The story about grandma.
Oh, my grandma had diabetes.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I want to jump back towards the book for a second and mention, of course, one of my favorite chapters is always going to be exercise. In any diabetes book I pick up, it's like the first page I go to.
All right. Same.
But I wanted to know, Matt, what your favorite chapter is. What was the most fun to write for you?
I think for me, it was the glucose visibility, because for me, that was the biggest game changer. I just remember the first time I got a CGM, I got a Dexcom, and the thing worked, and it worked beautifully, and it alerted me, and it showed me, it basically just opened my eyes to every single thing that I was doing. And I remember when I was younger thinking, oh, this is going to be weird if I have basically my entire, all the data of my entire life on some system, this sounds odd. But had I known how much of a difference it's going to make in the quality of life, man, I would have gotten Dexcom when they were, you know, a private company back in the day.
Right.
So it was so much fun to write, because I remember in one of the parts I wrote a case study about, you know, 8 years ago before I had Dexcom, when I passed out, you know, and it was a classic thing where I tested my blood sugar at my grandma's nursing facility. And this was back in Michigan. I made a trip up there for the weekend. I from Miami to Michigan, tested my blood. I was with my family and it was like 102. And so I thought, ooh, this is perfect. And I remember feeling kind of tired, kind of shaky. And I thought, well, maybe I'm just tired from the flights, you know, right. I was just exhausted from the workout I did earlier or something like that. The next thing I know, I was dancing around in the parking lot. People probably thought I was a lunatic, right? And then 20 minutes later, I'm passed out as my brother's like lowering me to the ground. And thank God he was there. I would have cracked my skull on the ground.
Oh, wow.
And the ER or the emergency teams are, you know, reviving me back to life. And I thought, this is the stupidest thing in the world. If I'm really scared about anything having to do with a CGM, I'm the stupid one here. So the next day I called my Dexcom rep and got the Dexcom 2 or whatever it was way back then. And instantly, within a month, I went from like an 8.2 A1C to, you know, 5s, just because I had all the other stuff really in play. But you just don't realize how important glucose visibility is. And I'm from Detroit originally. So I gave this little analogy with cars with regards to the CGM.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, without a CGM, it's sort of like trying to stay at 80 miles an hour for the entire day on a mountainous road with a lot of variables there, but you only get 4 readouts per day. You get one at the beginning, 3 hours later, you get another one. Mm. You know, good luck, right? As you're going up and down the hills, good luck. Yeah. You're never going to stay in the range. But then with the CGM, it's sort of like having a speedometer, which all cars have, right? So now you can just put it on cruise control and cruise all day and you're good. And it's really that important for everybody to have one. So I think that's the biggest game changer, and that can save a lot of lives. It really can.
Wow. Absolutely. You know,
everything else is sort of icing on the cake, pun intended. but really having the glucose visibility, that's number one. That's the foundation.
Absolutely. Which I think there's two sides to that as well, where it is, honestly, in my opinion, the most valuable tool outside of insulin itself to keep us healthy and in check. However, looking at it from a slightly different angle, where we are becoming dependent in a sense on this technology, where if you take Dexcom away from me, I get super nervous. I'm like, am I going to be okay if I go to sleep tonight? You know what I mean? Because I've become so used to it.
Yeah.
So there is the aspect of like, I used to be completely fearless and confident with my diabetes management before the Dexcom. And now I am fearless and confident with it, but nervous to go off of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
You're absolutely right. Which is why everything else is so important, right? So to continue to eat properly, exercise daily, that's critical, right? And managing your insulin appropriately and doing the proper things before you go to bed and that kind of deal is absolutely critical. But yeah, you're right. It should be used as a tool, not as a savior, I suppose.
I agree. Cause I mean, there's people listening to the episode and unfortunately it's harder for them to get a CGM but they know that. That's all I know. Before I had a CGM, I wasn't worried. And I'll be honest, I checked my blood sugar 8 times a day. That was normal for me. That's all I did. Check before a meal, 2 hours after a meal, 3 hours after the meal, then the next meal, then before exercise, after exercise. So then I got into a routine where everything stayed consistent. But then again, I was a robot. I was eating egg whites and I was eating a box, you know, just stuff that was boring and the same. But you just, I think it's always easy to go back to just say, you know, when in doubt, pull your meter out, just check, you know, and make sure you're okay. And the technology is there for us to have a meter that's the size of a finger and carry it everywhere. You know, it helps both ways, you know?
Yeah, you bet.
Absolutely. And those are some parameters that I've set in the past where I won't, like, unless I hear an alarm going off with my Dexcom, I won't allow myself to look at it for an hour or 2 hours after I eat. Cause I'm like, you know what? don't micromanage, Matt. Like, that's what I do sometimes. So I have to be careful with that. And so I'm fully confident that with my management, I'd be in range perfectly throughout the day. But that's the nighttime is still where I get a little bit iffy, where I'm like, you know what? Sometimes there's weird variables that happen, you know? And I remember waking up 4 a.m. before I had Dexcom, completely in a pool of sweat, shaky, and just like, oh, I'm at 30, you know, like that sucked. And that's why I would get hesitant to take it off.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah. And especially if you ever find yourself in a situation where you're when you're alone. Matt, do you have a girlfriend? Yeah. You have a girlfriend. Yeah. I saw her in the pictures from Hawaii, right?
Wife. So I got the girlfriend for life.
Did you sign something or how does that work?
but if you do find yourself alone, traveling alone, that I do feel a little bit of assurance with Dexcom. It's nice to go to bed.
Absolutely.
And say, okay. It's going to wake me up if something happens, but you can't replace good routines and a good lifestyle. That's really what makes, I think, health, I don't want to say good diabetics or healthy diabetic, a healthy diabetic, right?
Yeah. We all get to make choices every day, and there are good choices and bad choices. And you know, if you're future pacing, thinking about where I want to be in 5 years, 10 years, then you're going to make choices that benefit your health, which is consistency, eating healthy, exercising. So that's the part that's in our hands, right?
You bet.
Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah. Mr. Vandevecht, Matt, my co-host, can I ask Mr. Collins a speed round of these notes I have for Matt when I first came across his page?
Oh, yeah. Jump in there.
Yes. So, Matt, with regards to when I first came across your page, there were some things you spoke about and I loved it. It's things that I feel like different content creators have things that they need to speak about more because other people don't know. And I'll just go through like a speed round. You can just give me your answer and we can go from there. Freezing insulin pens. Tell us a little bit about that.
that was a funny one. Don't do it.
for sure. That's number one rule. Don't do it. Preparing for a hurricane.
Get to the grocery store early and get there first because all the supplies are going to be gone. And make sure you order your insulin as scheduled, so you're not behind the eight ball when the hurricane comes.
Insulin pen failures, plunger alignment.
Yeah, don't drop your pen ever.
Ooh,
those things come undone pretty easily.
That's interesting.
Your experience with Fiasp.
Awesome. However, the stuff works fast. So when you first switch over, be careful. Watch your CGM, dial it down by about 20% because that stuff works quickly.
Tips for when traveling.
Prepare early. Look at your checklist. There is a little checklist, by the way, at the end of T1D Pro and Appendix B. Sure you have all of your items and triple check that.
In terms of better sleep, has giving yourself a cutoff time of eating been the main component, and plus basal adjustments or good basal foundation been the solution to better sleep?
So two things. I would say cutoff time for eating is important, but what you eat is probably more important. The low fat, low protein, Matt, you can speak on this too. You know this stuff cold, but that's critical. I mean, that the fat will kill you in the middle of the night.
Yeah, that's actually a good one. That's my whole list for you. And actually, that's something big I try to learn on was in the middle of the night, I would have insane high blood sugars. And it would just be like, man, but I barely had any carbs. And then I'm like, okay, let me try to eat low fat, try to keep my protein light, like maybe a fish or maybe just not sort of a red meat, and then keep it higher in vegetables. And man, it was a game changer.
100%. Yeah. I'm actually, so one thing to note, along the lines of what you just said, this is a working document, the book T1D Pro. As more and more diabetics are involved and reading this, we're going to have conversations about it just like this. And one thing it's going to improve. So version 2 is going to come out in a little bit. Version 3 will come on after that, and it's always going to get better. So it's sort of our book, right? not my book. It's our book to make us better. One of the things I think I'm going to change a little bit was with regards to the diet chapter, with in lieu of what I eat, because I give some examples. And one I'm going to actually cross out and replace, and that's sushi for dinner, even though it's sashimi, so no carbs, right? It's still fatty, and I've noticed in the last couple of months it hasn't done that well. So I'm going to take that one out and replace it with something else. So
that's amazing. I mean, that's a good perspective to have. It's our book, you know. It's for the community, and I love sashimi, by the way. My Matt, do you have a couple questions for Matt Collins before we ask him the last question?
More of just a comment. The you mentioned it's a work in progress, right? Essentially where it's finished, but there are improvements that can be made as we have new suggestions. And as someone who also has a book out there, I was like, that's a really good point, because I was not anticipating making a second version. And then I'm getting all these emails like, it would be really cool if this was in there. I'm like, oh yeah, that is a good idea.
yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely good to have that outlook where it's like, you know what? There is going to be a version two. There is going to be a version three,
right?
And we're going to keep learning together.
That's trial cool. and error with your personal life and diabetes.
100%. I think the voice from the industry and from biotech companies, things like this, is pretty loud. You hear it all the time. I don't think our voice, in terms of giving each other feedback or insight into how to really manage our diabetes, is really that loud yet. And I think it can be. It's very important and should be louder. And I had a thought about this earlier today. I was talking to my dad about this, and he said, if you think about it, the industries really, or even our medical professionals can't really teach you how to have a 5.2 A1C because of the legality, right? There's a huge legal problem. If they told you how to manage your A1C to be 5.2, somebody's going to get sued. Right.
Yeah.
So it's up to us really to have this conversation and make it known. And that's where I think this can really be cool for us as the conversation grows. T1D Pro gets better. Matt, your book's going to get better, and it's going to help us all.
I agree.
Absolutely. Yeah. Doctors can do a lot of good, but it's our responsibility to be our own best advocate.
100%. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think Ali wants to take lead on our famous last question for every episode.
I don't know if I don't know if you've heard how I ask it, but I kind of like adjust it to like a newly diagnosed person, so I don't put so much, not pressure, but so much can come out of like, what's your best advice? So Matt Collins, you have someone listening and they're fairly newly diagnosed, and they could be a child, they could be someone your age, my age. What is something you want to give to them that's super important? This could be small or big. Go ahead.
Yeah. I would say the number one piece of advice that I would give them is to have a positive mindset with this. And I get a little bit emotional when I talk about it, because it's something that I remember my dad taught me when I was 15. But you can do whatever you want to do. There's no stopping what you want to do in your life. And it's really up to your perspective on how you manage yourself and how you go about your day-to-day life to make that happen. And the story is that if you can really hone in on your T1D and understand that this is not a life-limiting disease or condition, man, you can do anything. And I think that's a really powerful thing for a young kid to understand as he's going into middle school, high school, whatever it is. The world of opportunities is yours to conquer. So, take that into whatever you're trying to work on, and you should be successful.
Beautifully said. That's amazing. Thank you.
Sure. My pleasure.
Love that. I want to mention one thing. I love how Ali has been calling me my Matt. Oh man, it's a good distinction. That's good. I know who it is then, of course, but just cracking up each time you say it.
I was like, Mr. Vandevecht, part of my pancreas over there in the middle.
Oh man,
nice.
I don't know if my Matt has anything left to say, but Matt Collins, we really appreciate you having on, have you have, okay, I can't speak anymore. Thank you for coming on the show. It means the world to us taking time out and just the contribution you put to the community. You know, it's amazing. We really, really appreciate it. You don't know how many lives you're impacting every day when you put out a post, you know, put effort into your book, put yourself out there. Where can they find you?
You can find me on Matt_T1D on Instagram, or if you just go to Amazon and type in T1D Pro, you'll find the book right there. It's bright yellow book. So you'll see it there. It's in print and ebook. So nice and easy for anybody who has a ebook reader or an iPad. You can just, I think it's $4 right now. So you can just download it and it's right there for you.
Wow. Good price. Amazing. Thank you so much. And yeah. Everyone, stay tuned for new episodes. Make sure to subscribe and we'll see you soon, guys.
Thanks, guys.